Now you're awake. Good morning, everyone. In case for those who don't recognize me or forgotten, I am Reverend Brian Ferguson. I'm the minister here at Wildflower Church. But I've been on vacation, but I thought I'd come back with a bang. I'd like to thank Mariachio Del Oro from the Crockett High School for being here with us. They'll be hearing more of them, so don't leave. So be hearing a lot more of them. But lovely to see every one of you here this morning. Thank you so much for being here. I know you have a lot of choices to do, and we do have air conditioning, so that may have been part of your decision today. But it's lovely to be back. Lovely to see every one of you, even in these temperatures. You're welcome here, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, wherever you are in life, wherever you are in the emotional arc of your life. You are welcome here. We are pleased to see you. I invite you to rise in body or spirit and join me for the first hymn, Open My Heart, 1013. 1013. And we're going to sing it and finish when it feels right. And it's in the teal hymnal.
Good morning. Unitarian Universalists start their services by lighting a chalice. This morning, Duncan Lego from Mariachi Del Oro will light our chalice for us. Please join me in our chalice lighting words. They are not in your order of service, but if you know them, please join along. With the kindling of this flame, we affirm our commitment to accept life's gifts with grace and gratitude, and to use them to bless the world in the spirit of love. My name is Michelle Baker, and I'm this morning's lay worship leader. I would like to welcome you to Wildflower Church, where we believe that all people have worth and dignity, whatever the color of their skin, the status of their citizenship, their gender expression or identity, their ability or economic status. We invite you to join with us in our spiritual journey towards building a society in which all voices are heard and all people are loved. I want to give a special welcome to our first-time and returning visitors. After this service, please join us for a refreshment and conversation in the community room in the building just to your left as you exit the sanctuary. We want to get to know you and answer any questions you may have. And again, please welcome the Mariachi Del Oro for providing music for this service today. And now please join me in the unison reading, which is found in your order of service. Let me not pray to be sheltered from dangers, but to be fearless in facing them. Let me not beg for the stilling of my pain, but for the heart to conquer it. Let me not look for allies in life's battlefield, but to my own strength. Let me not crave in anxious fear to be saved, but hope for the patience to win my freedom. Grant me that I may not be a coward, feeling your mercy in my success alone, but let me find the grasp of your hand in my failure. And now let's take a moment to welcome the people sitting near us. Here at Wildflower, we do encourage those who wish to get up and move about to greet those who you don't know very well.
Good morning. Welcome back. Thank you, I'm Brian Felton. Willie was very quick to get here this morning. Good morning, everyone. Now, there's a whole pew here that's empty. We don't have sinner's pews in the Unitarian Universalist Church. So you're welcome to sit there. Thank you, Karen. Well, good morning, everyone. How's your summer going? I know some of you have started back to school already, haven't you? Yeah. Great, isn't it? You must be really excited. She's turned her back on me in disgust. Well, I've got a story this morning, and it's from the Jewish tradition, but actually comes from the country of Afghanistan, which we don't tend to think of as having a big Jewish population. And Afghanistan is a country away over in South Asia. And it's in the news a lot because they've been having some problems for a few years. But this is an ancient story about the Jewish tradition there. And it's about this king he's not very happy. You know, he's got this gorgeous palace and he's got this, you know, all these servants and he's got all this power, but he's not happy. So he's looking out the window of his palace and he sees all his subjects going around and they're really happy. You know, they're smiling and laughing and he's like, how come I've got all this power and they look much happier than I am? So he decides he wants to go out and find out how come these people are so happy. So he walks out and he gets into, he takes off all his royal clothes and just dresses like as a regular subject. And he's walking around and he's passing this really disheveled house, but he hears this joyful singing coming from it. So he looks in to see who's there. And there's this kind of relatively old man, like my age, sitting there, and he's singing away and he's eating, but he's got a table, chair, and a bed and nothing else in his house. So he's really quite poor. So the king knocks on his door and says, can I come in? And I'd like to talk to you. And so they talk and they have a lovely time. And he says, how do you obviously don't have much money. He said, but I've got enough to eat. That's all I need. And so he shares his food with the king. He says, so what do you do? He says, oh, I repair shoes. You know, because this is a place where people don't just buy new shoes when they need them. They actually repair the shoes. He says, I repair shoes for people. He says, well, what would you do if you didn't have shoes? And he says, you know, I have faith that God will provide. And he says, okay. So the king the next day goes back and says, no one's allowed to repair shoes. I'm going to test this person to see if he can stay happy even during hardship. So the next day it's announced that no one can repair shoes. So the shoe repairer is wondering, what's he going to do? Because he still needs to eat. He's got no food for that night. So he looks around and he sees, well, there's a lot of people going for water. Maybe I can help them get some water. So he gets a big pail and he fills his water from the river, takes it back. and he sells water to people, and he's able to afford the meal that night. Well, the king goes out to see how he's doing. Is he still happy now that he didn't eat? And there he is in his kitchen, singing away with food, and he shares the food with the king. The king's like, how were you able to afford that? Because, you know, I heard that you're not allowed to make shoes anymore. Well, God provided a way. I was able to get water and bring it and sell it to people so I'm able to eat. So the king goes back and says, Next day he buys, no one's allowed to sell water to other people. And so this is announced, and the man gets up and he says, you can't sell water anymore. He goes, what am I going to do? So he looks around, and it's winter in Afghanistan, and it's really cold, and he sees a lot of people are going to get wood. And so for fires, he says, I'll go to the forest, get some food, some wood, and sell it so I can buy some food. So he does that, and he goes around the village selling it, wood to people. Next day, the king comes by, looks in, thinking, I've got him now. And he sees, he's there he is, eating away, singing away, happy as ever. And the king's getting really angry now. He goes, okay, I know what I'm going to do the next day. So the next day he gets up and goes, all people who were selling wood need to become part of my guard. And so all these people who were selling wood, including this man that the king had been visiting, come in, and they get a guard's uniform and they get a sword that they keep. And the king said, I'm really going to test this person's faith. And he said, he calls the man up, who's one of his guards, and said, this person has been stealing stuff. I want you to kill him with your sword. And the man said, I can't do that. My faith, my religion, my God does not want me to harm another person. And he says, I'm ordering you as a king that you need to do that. And the man said, no, I can't do that. And he said, and to prove that God does not want me to do that, if I pull the sword out, then if it's wood, then he doesn't want me to kill him. And the king says, I'm not so sure about this idea. He said, you go away and think about it. And then if you come back the next day, we can talk about this more. So the man goes away and goes, what am I going to do? And I don't have any food for tonight, because the king said the guards only get paid at the end of the month. So the man thinks about it. What can he do? He said, I'm going to sell my sword for food. And so he gets a sword, so he takes the end of the sword, not the handle, and he melts the sword, the metal, so that he can sell it to people, because people want metal, because they can make pots and pans. But he's only got his handle of his sword now, so he makes a wooden stem for the sword and puts it back in his sheath. So he's still got the metal handle, but he's got a wooden sword. So he goes back the next day, and the king says, so, what did your God say to you? He said, God said that if my sword, and I pull it out and it's made of wood, then he does not want this person to die. And the king said, well, let me see that. So the guy pulls out the sword, and he's got the metal handle, and it's just made of wood. And the king looks at that and said, you're a very clever man. You're a very wise man. I want you to become an advisor, because you know how to be happy, and you know how to find solutions to problems. And that's the type of God I want. I want a God that helps me create happiness, to create joy, and to create justice in my land. So thank you so much for listening. We're not having religious education today, so if you go back to your seats, and there'll be another story later. Thanks. One of the things about that story from Afghanistan, it might seem familiar to many of you, because it's a Jewish midrash or interpretation of the book of Job, where God is punishing someone to test their faith. And that story is in parallel to that. And one of the things I like about that, because in typical Jewish tradition, the person has faith, but he finds the solution to his own problems. It's not a blind faith. He realizes he can't just hope that God is going to take care of it. He needs to find a solution to his problems. And he does it by finding a different job. He finds it by being a creative solution to the, you know, how to acknowledge that he sold the metal for his sword. He finds solutions to his problems on his own. And I think that's one of the questions many Unitarian Universalists have when we talk about faith. I'm doing a series of three services on faith, hope, and charity, and this is the first one on faith. And faith can be a difficult word for many Unitarian Universalists because it's what we've got faith in. Do we have faith in God? Do we have faith in community? Do we have faith in ourselves? Do we have faith in democracy? Do we have faith in our country? What do we have faith in? And I think one of the struggles we have, we too often think about faith being this blind faith, this kind of naive idea that things will be okay. And I think we can look around us and realize that things are not okay. And in the Christian scriptures in Hebrews, it says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And I like to think faith are things that I believe in, that guide me, my ideals and values, that I maybe don't have proof for. It's not scientific. I can believe that the love of all people is the right thing to do. There's no scientific proof. That is something I take on faith, and it comes from our Unitarian Universalist tradition. And one of the things about faith, it does not focus on results. It focuses on our hopes and our convictions in the present. Next week, I'll be talking more about hope, and hope's more a projection into the future. Faith is the idea that we are doing the right thing right now, to the best of our knowledge, to the best of our values. We are living the best we can right now. And faith involves a commitment, and it involves a commitment to a path, not a commitment to an outcome. Now, the parents who brought the children here, that's an act of faith. Some would say having a child's an act of faith. And it is. It's a faith that this world is worth bringing a new life into, the belief that this world can be fulfilling, can be joyous, can be caring, and can be just. And that's an act of faith. And our faith gets tested like the shoe repairer in that story. Not usually by some malicious king who's testing people. Not like Job in the Hebrew scriptures who's been tested by Satan, the accuser, with God's blessing. We get tested by health scares. We get tested by losing loved ones. We get tested by broken relationships. We get tested by financial hardship. We have faith in ourselves and in our community that we can overcome these. So it's not about faith in God, or faith in love, or faith in community, or faith in justice, or faith in oneself, or faith in kindness. It's having a faith that what we will need to take the next step in life will be there when we need it. It's a way of taking our fear and anxiety and having faith that we can find the courage and strength to take the next step. And faith is not just simply hope. It is focused in the present. So we'll be talking more about this later, but I want to leave you with this question. What commitments and values will allow you to take the next step in an area where you are fearful or anxious?
I'm almost afraid to talk now. Giving comes in many forms. There is a kind of giving done from person to person at birthdays, festivals, and celebrations. There is philanthropic giving, such as making a donation to your favorite charity or cause. There is political giving in support of causes and leaders that you believe in. And there is spiritual giving, giving from the heart. Though monetary gifts may not seem spiritual, they do help the mission and life of this church. Though spirit is ethereal, the church exists in the mundane world. Without your gifts, we could not provide a place for spirituality to bloom. Please give as generously as you are able, each according to their own budget. If you are visiting today for the first time, please let the plate pass as your presence here is gift enough. The offering will now be given and gratefully received. Thank you.
Thank you. That's so inspiring. I am Dee Adams, and I'm a member of the Board of Wildflower Board of Trustees. And at Wildflower Church, we believe that community matters and takes up some time in our services to share the way we are living our mission with faith that we can take it the next step. I'd love to have you share the mission with me. It's on the back side of our order of service, and some of you may know it by heart. So, Wildflower is growing spiritually together, spreading love, justice, and joy. I promised you that I had a church bumper sticker. I just got it yesterday. You too can have your very own and spread Wildflower's mission on wheels. So the way to do that is in the Wildflower newsletter. I don't think it's in the order of service this morning, but it's a real cool mission statement. I'd like to talk about love, and I want you to save the date for next Saturday, August 4th, from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. for the first annual Speak Your Truth, People of the Global Majority, UU Conference. It will be held at Austin Community College, Eastview Campus, 3401 Weberville Road. This was organized by a cluster of UU churches in this area, including Wildflower, First UU, and San Marcos Congregation. This is an opportunity for people who identify as from the global majority, as people of color, or biracial or multiracial. It will be a spiritual healing and educational space held by the folks that are organizing it for that population. This group is also developing roles for white allies to be of support as they continue to plan. If you'd like to attend or want to be involved in some way, there's information in the order of service. And I'm sure you'll hear more about this as we continue this initiative in this cluster. Justice and joy. Here I want to note the opportunity to volunteer and to celebrate something that's occurred. You will note an opportunity in your order of service to volunteer for the Africa Dance Fest. This is occurring on August 11th and 12th. It sounds like an amazing way to support this event and also take part in some of the activities, including workshops with a renowned artist in the African diaspora, dance, drum, and song. Take a friend or partner to this culturally rich event. Finally, as I've said before, we make our space available at no charge to organizations of the people of the global majority, as well as other organizations. This past week, in our community room, the multicultural coordinating team of Undoing Racism Austin held an Undoing Racism training. It was a powerful event held by 50 people. And please feel that collective energy this morning as you're in the space, the cross-racial connections and vibrant connection and sense of community that happened there is amazing.
I have one additional announcement. It's that we are still looking for lay worship leaders to fulfill the role that Michelle is doing so well this morning. We will be having a lay worship leader training sometime in September, but we have openings for the next few Sundays. So if anyone would like to join me up here in the next few Sundays, I'm not that scary when you get up close, then please let me know and there's opportunities. We'll be talking about hope next week and charity the week after. I invite you now to join me in the spirit of prayer, meditation, and reflection. These are the words of retired Unitarian Universalist minister Bruce Southworth. torn by desires to sit back and to enjoy the beauty of the world, to savor the blue skies and gentle days, and by desires to recast the world and to fight its evils, to save the world. Torn by all these things that hurt and confuse and make no sense amid the beauty, yet supported by all those things that heal and hold us. Smiles, kisses, mountain vistas, and gentle waves, warm words. We live in mystery. We live torn apart at times, so much glory, so much pain. We live in faith, faith in ourselves and each other. Faith that we can create bonds of the Spirit that proclaim we are not alone. We have much health within us. We can live through the heartache to new life. So for the grace of the world and all the tumble to this day, we give thanks. I invite you to join me in silence. Blessed be and amen.
Thank you.
What do I have to say about faith? Nikki Giovanni, American poet, activist, and writer, said that you have to have faith in what you say. So I will try. May not be perfect, but the words and feelings are genuine. Faith is trust without proof. Faith is trust that someone or something will be there for you and take care of you. Faith is a belief in someone or something that is not provable. Faith is being willing to wait patiently, and faith is letting go. More than that, life is faith. Today, I'd like to talk about some of the different aspects of faith and how they fit into my life. Faith for survival. When we are babies, we depend on faith. We can't survive without the faith that our parents will feed us, keep us warm, and comfort us. Of course, babies don't conceptualize this faith, but they have it. They must, and I was no different. I was born while my dad was still in Vietnam. Surrounded by my mom, grandparents, and three doting uncles, I wanted for nothing. I was clean, I was warm, I had a beautiful room in my grandmother's house with a white crib, and I actually remember that crib and the sun shining through blue curtains. My every need was anticipated and met with abundant love and care. Faith was easy then. I barely whimpered before my Uncle Richard would pick me up and take care of me, wrap me up, and rock me. My grandfather always tried to feed me Nilla wafers, whether it was good for babies or not. Losing faith. My parents divorced when I was 8 and my brother was 7. And that was the beginning of my loss of faith. As we grow, we find that we can't always trust those around us. Each time we are promised something and it doesn't come to pass, that original faith is tried. For me, that faith was tried every time my dad was supposed to visit. Back then, I didn't know the struggles my dad faced. Sometimes he lived in the same town, but other times he lived hours away. He would drive all day to see us. Sometimes he would drive all day to see us and take us back to his house all day in a huge, huge car. Often he was later than he said he would be. Sometimes he was hours late, sometimes days. I learned not to depend on him in that way. My grandmother, my father's mother, comforted me, urging me to welcome him when he was there and not to worry too much about when he arrived. But this lack of faith often colored how I interacted with the world. As they say, don't count your chickens before they hatch. That became my motto, either that or seeing is believing. Looking for faith. When my mother remarried, my brother and I did not like my stepfather. It was at that time I really learned to make friends. I joined the Baptist church down the street because that was where the basketball and free food was. And also the minister, the father of my friends, who were three boys who lived behind us and played Star Trek with us every day. And I needed something to believe in. I listened to the stories. I sang all the songs, but I didn't belong, not really. I did not find faith there, although the food was good. And I continued to go back for that. At the same time, my dad had a girlfriend who I like to call my almost stepmom. She is still my almost stepmom, even though my dad has remarried and I now have a new stepmom. She introduced me to the Native American religion and culture. This is where my pagan roots come from. She taught me to be thankful for the natural world. Although Dad would take us to cut down a Christmas tree every year, it was she that said prayers and left offerings for the tree that we cut, thanking it and leaving a seed in its place. She taught that everything has a spirit and should be respected and honored. She had great faith that if we honored and respected Mother Earth, then she would take care of us. And I have carried these beliefs into adulthood, which would test my faith more and more. But I still have faith that Mother Earth and the universe will take care of us. Finding faith. Fast forward through young adulthood and into motherhood. When I was pregnant with my first son, anxiety reared its head. I became so anxious that my midwife actually told me to stop reading books to prepare for the birth. She was asking me to have faith in the natural processes that are childbirth. Then, a little later on, when it was determined that he had autism, my faith was tested once again. Was I a good enough mother to raise this type of child? Turns out, I am. He's now 20. He'll be 21. I'm bracing myself. But it took many years and many ups and downs and struggles to come to this realization. I had to have faith and let go. I loved my son no matter what and trusted that the universe would help me along. I turned to my friends, to La Leche League, and to family to find the faith that I needed. I became an active seeker of faith. After my second child was born, I also found Wildflower. From then on, I have reaffirmed and reformed my faith in the universe and in myself. Keeping faith. Now my life is taking another turn. My family I have been with for 23 years is changing. My children are turning into wonderful young adults. My relationship with my husband is coming to an end. My kids and I are in the slow, sometimes painful process of creating a new reality. There are 1,000 unknowns. But now I'm old enough to know that I can have faith that all will work out. Some things may be what I want. Others will be difficult to swallow. This faith will hold us up, and we will be scaffolds for one another. I will stay balanced and surf along to my destination, though I'll probably get wet from time to time. And now please join and please rise and join in singing hymn number 194, Faith is a Forest.
I want to talk about a person from our history who I believe shows a great commitment to his, and I believe, our faith. And he's a man called Francis David. And he lived in the 1500s in Transylvania, or Bohemia as it was at the time, which nowadays it would be the Hungarian-speaking part of Romania in Eastern Europe. And Francis David was a priest, and he started off a Catholic. And in true Unitarian Universalist tradition, he left that and went to become a Lutheran. And then he became a Calvinist, and eventually became a Unitarian. And as you can imagine, in the 1500s, during this time, just not long after, historically, the Reformation, there was a lot of violence in Europe. So jumping faith like that was a dangerous business. But he was committed to it. And Francis David, we know him for the great phrase, "You do not need to think alike to love alike," which was translation from the Hungarian. But he was also very important for another reason. He was an advisor to what was the first and only Unitarian king that we ever had in our history in Transylvania, King Sigismund. And Francis David was hugely influential in this thing called the Edict of Torda, which we're celebrating the 450th anniversary of this year. And the Edict of Torda basically allowed that churches could decide for themselves what religion they were. If they liked the minister, great. If they didn't, they should get rid of them. Something that many Unitarian Universalist churches appreciate to this day. Don't get any ideas. I'm not dead yet. But he brought in this Edict of Torda, and it's actually the first definition, first proclamation of religious tolerance, saying that it was okay to be a religion of your own choice. And so it's quite important. So this is the 450th anniversary. But what happened when that king died and he was replaced by a subsequent king who was not Unitarian, that began, the religious freedom was less and less tolerated in Bohemia. And eventually what happened, this didn't stop Francis David continually innovating, and he was actually convicted and thrown in prison and died in prison. And he was guilty of religious innovation. It was actually a crime, religious innovation. And I think it's important to hold up people like that, because that is a strong faith when you are willing to be imprisoned for it. You are so committed to your beliefs, your ideals, your values, you are willing to be imprisoned. So let me throw out the question, what would you be willing to be imprisoned for? Your faith? I'm not sure. I am. Family? Possibility. There are things I would be willing to be imprisoned for. So I think it's really important to look at, what do we have faith in that we are willing to make sacrifices for? And faith is about a commitment to these values and principles that we believe are life-affirming and life-enhancing. The contemporary Unitarian Universalist academic Paul Razor says this: "Liberal theology, of which Unitarian Universalism is part, is not for the faint of heart. It points us in a general direction without telling us a specific destination. It refuses to make our commitments for us, but holds us accountable to the commitments we make. The liberal religious tradition is an invitation, not a mandate. It invites us to live with ambiguity without giving in to facile compromise. To engage in dialogue without trying to control the conversation, to be open to change without accepting change too casually, to take commitments seriously but not blindly, and to be engaged in the culture without succumbing to the culture's values. Liberal religion calls us to strength without rigidity, conviction without ideology, openness without laziness. It is an eyes wide open faith, a faith without certainty." A faith without certainty. And I think that's where Unitarian Universalists often get confused. We think faith needs to be absolute with certain.
And faith with certainty, faith without doubt, is an ideology. We are a religion because we embrace that doubt. Francis David, with his innovation, he was constantly looking for something that made more sense, was more emotionally attaching, more emotionally connecting for him. He did not limit his faith to his faith of his childhood or to the faith that was known at that time. And I think one of the important things that Paul Razor says, that our faith holds us accountable to the commitments we make. It doesn't decide the commitments we want for us, that we want to make, but it holds us accountable to those commitments. And one of the great stories from the Jewish tradition is the story of the Exodus, and where the Jews get freed from slavery. And most of us know the story of the parting of the Red Sea and the crossing of it. And most of us have been moved from the movie with Charlton Heston with his staff and the water opening up and they march in and it collapses in the Egyptians. That may not be how it happened. Hollywood may have lied to us. And there's a Jewish interpretation of this that I really love. It says, when Moses asked for the water to part, it did not part. It wasn't till the first Jewish person took a step into the water that the water parted. That person had the faith that it wasn't the fear of the Egyptians chasing them, it was the hope of the promised land. They had faith that God, the sacred, the divine would provide. If they needed a path, there would be a way. And I love that idea because I think that is faith. Faith is not this blind thing that wonderful things are happening. Faith is taking that first step when you're fearful and when you're anxious and when you don't know what the outcome's going to be. That, to me, is a faith that I can live into. It's not a faith without certainty, it's a faith with doubt. But it's a faith that will replace my fear and anxiety with courage and strength, and that's the faith that I desire to embrace. Then Michelle did a beautiful job from talking from a personal life of how she has lost faith in things. I think it's very easy for many of us to lose faith now. Faith in humanity, faith in democracy, faith in our country, faith in our political system. Faith, I must say, in humanity when I see the cruelty being inflicted upon children at the borders, being taken away from their parents, and who have still not been reunited with their parents. It's a sign that faith has outside 100 days, it's probably 101 now, days where children have been taken away from their parents. That type of thing is challenging my faith in humanity, our faith in our country, and faith in democracy. But what Unitarian Universalist faith calls me to do is, what am I going to do about that? In the prayer, we can sit back and look at the beauty of the world, or we can engage the hardships, the challenges of the world. We can engage it knowing that what we are called to do is respond to the cruelty of the world, to the hardship of the world, to the struggles and challenges of the world, to respond to that with kindness, compassion, with love, and most of all with integrity to the faith that guides our life. It's easy to feel depleted in our hearts and our wills weakened. But through communities like this, through our community partners, through our own history, where I look how we have responded to challenges in the past, that's what I have faith in. I still have faith in the potential of humanity, even if the current reality of humanity raises questions to me. Where am I going to get the courage and strength for this time, if not from my faith? It's not going to be from a Netflix binge. It's not going to be from reading a book. It's going to be from taking action. It's going to be from taking action with others, taking action as a community, and getting guided by the best ideals and values. That's where courage comes from. Because I do have faith in humanity. I have faith in each of us here, including myself, that we are sacred beings. We have a divine spark in each of us that recognizes the divine spark in all others. We are connected through that divine spark to a higher power that I don't understand, but I believe. That divine spark calls us to care for one another, to engage with one another with kindness, with compassion, and to seek for others what we want for ourselves. The ability to embrace the beauty and love of life. If we truly accept that every one of us here has a sacred divine spark that connects us with them, if we truly accept this, how might that change how we live? How might that change the community around us? How might that change our country? If we truly accept that and live into that. I invite us all to look at where we are in our life. What we are doing and determine, is this what we want for ourselves? Is this what we want for our community? Is this what we want for our country? Then commit ourselves to live more fully into our values, to live faithfully a life of courage, a life of strength, a life of healing, and a life of kindness. I invite you to rise in body or spirit for our final hymn, Wake Now My Senses, hymn 298.
Wake now my senses.
I'd like to invite everyone to join us for refreshments in the community room to our left. I'd like to thank the mariachi band again. Thank you so much from Crockett High School. Proving you can not get too much of a good thing, they are going to be playing here for the postlude, and I invite you all to sit and listen to them, and you don't need to leave immediately, and that means I'll get some coffee, so thank you. But also, feel free to stay as long. They're going to play here a few tunes, and you're welcome to stay as long as you want. But if you need the bathroom or a coffee, join me. Theodore Parker, our Unitarian Universalist minister from the 19th century, has these words. Be ours a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple, all space. Its shrine, the good heart. Its creed, all truth. Its ritual, works of love. Its profession of faith, divine living. I wish for each of you the path, the commitment, the strength, the courage to live a divine life. Go with love, go in love. Blessed be and amen.